Pressroots Podcast.
On today's episode of Press Roots, we have BJ Kissel, former Chiefs reporter, now director of athletics at Let It Fly Media. We had a great chat with BJ. He's an awesome guy. A lot of cool stories from his time with the Chiefs. And I know you'll enjoy this interview because we enjoyed it a lot. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Press Roots Pod. If you want to follow me, it's at Choate Mason. I also have another podcast. It's called The Red Rifle Rundown. You can find it on Spotify. Working on getting it on Apple. But go check that out. Go check out our Twitter. And enjoy this episode with BJ Kissel. So we now welcome on BJ Kissel, former Chiefs reporter, now director of athletics at Let It Fly Media. BJ, I want to say that you're a guy that I really respect, and I appreciate what you did with the Chiefs and all the media coverage that you did as a fan of the Chiefs. I'm very appreciative of what you did, and I just want to say that you have the utmost respect from me.
Thank you. That means a lot. I appreciate that. It was an honor to have that job as somebody who grew up a Chiefs fan, and then to feel like, you know, I had a responsibility that fans are living vicariously through me, cheering down on the sidelines, that, you know, kind of navigating that line of being a fan but also being a professional and having a job to do is something I took very seriously. But I, you know, enjoyed every minute of it. So I appreciate those words.
So you had an incredible six-year run covering the Chiefs, a team you grew up watching, culminating in a Super Bowl championship. That had to be pretty cool. What went into the decision to departing with the Chiefs? And tell us a little bit about your new role with Let It Fly Media and what you'll be doing there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's definitely a question I've been getting a lot as somebody, you know, grew up in Chiefs Kingdom and is always going to be a Chiefs fan to figure out, like, why would you, you know, leave that scenario and leave that situation? And, you know, it's a layered answer. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just one thing to make a decision like that. I absolutely loved my time with the Chiefs. Like I said, it was an honor to hold that position, and not just what it meant in terms of creating content, but in terms of being out in the community, you know, and seeing fans and, you know, the few times that you get recognized or if somebody says something to you, being, you know, able to answer questions and chat with them. And I hope that anyone I kind of came across, you know, during my time, during those 6 years, and even now, you know, those were positive interactions. I felt like they were, and I enjoyed it. But for me, you know, working in the NFL is not easy. You know, it's not an easy lifestyle to work in sports in general. And I think everyone who can kind of relate, and as you guys get into this business, it's a lot of travel. It's a lot of, you know, nights and weekends and things like that. And, you know, my job with traveling, you know, my number one job is being a dad. You know, I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. You know, they're getting to an age where I start missing stuff, and they know that I'm leaving, and they tell me, like, why are you leaving again? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And, you know, this isn't also a job that you can't turn off. You know, I couldn't just turn off, you know, being the Chiefs reporter at 7 o'clock at night when there'd be breaking news and something would happen. You know, the job changed over time. I started off as more of a writer, as mainly a writer without a lot of TV experience, no podcast or radio. And then, you know, 6 years later, I'm not writing much at all. And I'm doing podcasts and videos and hosting shows and all these other things. So it's a testament to how the job changes and that you've got to be flexible. But for me, the decision was about family. It was about timing. And it was about the opportunity that I have at Let It Fly. And that had more to do with it than anything else. I love the people that I worked with every day at the Chiefs. And those are friendships that I'm going to take with me. But, you know, the opportunity to Let It Fly and to build something and to work directly with players and to build their channels. And working in a smaller company that's a little bit more fluid. So if you have an idea, you can act on that idea and you can go. It's nothing against the Chiefs or any other big organization, but any big organization is the same in that, you know, decisions have to get funneled up and, you know, ideas have to get funneled up and a lot of people have to sign off on those. And, you know, that takes time. And sometimes, you know, that goes against the creative process. And, you know, that's something that, again, isn't unique to any one place, any one sport. Or even sports in general, just in terms of anyone working at a big company will understand you have a good idea and it takes a while to hear back or anything like that. But, you know, the opportunity to Let It Fly Media, that right now we are working directly with athletes, talking to their representatives and their agents, you know, creating these content packages, these branding packages for players to help get their story out. guys getting ready for the draft or preparing for, the biggest moment in their lives. There will never be another time where, Rakeem Boyd is going to have more eyes on him. Maybe that's a bad example because of Last Chance U, but, there's never going to be a time when that player gets drafted that the fan base of the team that drafts him will have all eyes on that one player. That hour after the player is drafted, when every fan is Googling his name and checking out his Twitter and his Instagram, the stuff that all of us do, every beat writer does it, every fan does it. If the player's got content that helps tells his story in that moment, then he's taking advantage of that moment where everybody's got their eyes on him. And so we come in, we offer website services where we give a personalized website for the player and we aggregate all the content written about him for the months leading up to the draft. And I'd write long form stories, detailing that player's journey. And then we offer a documentary where we go to the player's hometown and do a full professional E60 style documentary, not unlike we did with the Chiefs and guys like Reggie Ragland and Alan Bailey and Sharkhandrick West and Chris Jones and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, like all these guys that we went and spent time with in their hometowns and did a documentary to tell their story. We're offering that as well as graphics packages for social media. And then Billy Quach, our hype video expert, will get his hands on some highlights and, go visit a couple of workouts for the player and create more content. Again, everything we create, we give to the player to post on their social media accounts to build their brand by telling their story and having them capitalize off of it, which is not necessarily the case at the NFL level or the professional level in a lot of cases. That the content's being created for that brand as opposed to, creating it directly for the player and having the player capitalize on that. So that's in a nutshell kind of our first idea that's branched off into about 100 different directions right now, pitching some veteran players, some content ideas. But the feedback has been phenomenal from agents that, are trying to get their head around, everything that's going on in this business right now. But it's definitely a niche that, we're going to fill. We're not going to work with many players each year. That way we can do it right. So, just 6 to 8 players each year is all we're going to work with. But it's going to be really obvious the guys we are working with, because all of a sudden they're going to have a lot of really cool content coming from their social media channels and blow that up and hopefully take advantage of that moment when they're drafted.
Now, going back to your time with the Chiefs, you talked about how those ideas have to get funneled up. But I feel like a lot of the ideas in the past 6 years, and you could tell how on social media – the Chiefs have become more and more of a presence. I think that a lot of that is thanks to you. And are there some things you did with the Chiefs that you're like most proud of? Like, this is my baby that I did with them.
There's a lot of things that I'm proud of, but I think the most important thing for anybody getting into this business, that I ended up getting a lot of credit because I was the face and the person out there that was doing it. But we have a team of 10 to 12 video producers and, hype video people and content creators behind the scenes that you don't see on camera. People like, Anna Topkin, a former Arkansas Razorback, was my live stream producer with the Chiefs, and she did absolutely phenomenal work that fans all will absolutely appreciate, and they'll never know who really did a lot of the heavy lifting behind the scenes. And like I said, I get credit, Matt McMullen gets credit, Mitch gets credit for stuff that he does, but it's the people behind the scenes and the people that you don't see that really make a lot of it work. And it's not a cliche to say that. You hear people on camera talk about that before, but that's how much truth there is to it. And people who work in sports broadcasting understand that. But, as far as most proud, I'm just most proud. That's a good question. Recently, I was really proud of how we covered the parade. And the only reason I bring that up is it's so hard in this business to step back. And I always, my motto is be where your feet are, because you're always thinking about the next thing. You're standing on the sidelines of a game and you're worried about what you have to do after the game. You're worried about this, you're worried about that. Instead of just taking in, like, I'm standing on the sideline of the Super Bowl. Like, I'm just going to take this in right now. And I think the parade was an opportunity and a moment that everyone that I work with in our department got to perfectly navigate that line of celebrating, having fun, and also like doing a job. We had to cover the parade. We were out there, we were interviewing guys. I was hopping from bus to bus with a pass, which is probably the coolest moment of my life as somebody who grew up a Chiefs fan. Being there was awesome. Being in Miami, being down on the sideline with confetti, all that, awesome. But for growing up in Kansas City and coming back, and going down Main Street and just being at Union Station and all the fans there and having access to just walk wherever I wanted, that was awesome. And I was taking advantage of it. People saw me walking around. I'd always have two beers in my back pocket. I'd chug a beer with a player, and then I'd put it down and I'd interview him real fast. You didn't see that on the edited version, but if we back it up about 6 seconds, you'll see Cam Irving and D-Rob and all the guys like cheersing, chugging a beer, and then doing an interview. I can say these things now. But for the fans who were around, it was just a cool experience walking down, giving them beers, high fives, them passing drinks to us if we were out. And then to see the content that we produced at the end, that we were having fun, but the content was also really good when it was all said and done. And we got to document, you know, one of the coolest days in not just Chiefs history, but Kansas City history. I'll always remember that. And I was really proud that we all got to have some fun, because you get so caught up in this business that you got to step back and have some fun. And I feel like we all did that during the parade.
Switching topics a little bit, going back to your days in college at Kansas State, you played some college baseball. What went into the decision to like in journalism, how did you get into football? And like, at what point did you know that your sports career didn't involve actually playing sports?
That was pretty early. I think I knew in high school, you know, I was a 6 foot tall pitcher, right-hander that threw like 84. So like, I wasn't going to get drafted. Scouts get drafted by drafting guys who throw 84 who aren't very tall or project to throw 96 at some point. But sports broadcasting was my degree from the moment I did sports broadcasting classes when I was in high school. So I knew at some level I wanted to do that. My original plan was to be like a color analyst for baseball. Because I was playing baseball and I like to talk about the sport, and I feel like I can communicate pretty well. But, you know, it wasn't, I think, until my senior year of college that one of my teachers said, you know, figure out what you want to do by looking at somebody who's in a position that you think you want and figuring out how they got there. And it seems like really simple advice, but when you're a senior in college, you look back and say, okay, who are all the color analysts in baseball? And they're all major, like Hall of Fame players. Like, you know what, why would they believe this righty who threw 84 who played a little bit of college baseball? Like, I could do it at smaller levels. But right then, mindset kind of changed, not necessarily to football at that moment. But like I said, I actually started off out of high school. I went to University of Central Missouri. It was a Division II school in Warrensburg, about an hour east of Kansas City. And redshirted my first year. We won the national title in 2003. And then my coach got the job at K-State, and I transferred up there with him for my last 3 years of eligibility. So that's kind of how I ended up at K-State in that timing, because a lot of people know me as K-State, but I actually started and played my first year at Central Missouri. But, you know, it was always going to be sports broadcasting, and it was actually kind of by happenstance that, you know, I found my way back into this position. It's a really long story, if you guys have time. But, you know, it's a story about networking and really understanding that every interaction you have with anybody in this business can come back to help you or hurt you. Not that it should be the motivation for you to be a good person, but something to always have in the back of your mind is, you know, every interaction matters. And that came true with me when I interviewed for the job of the Chiefs. The people I hadn't talked to in years were called as references because they want to do all their due diligence for somebody who's going to step in front and represent the organization. So, you know, that whole process took like a month. I think I did like 16 interviews, three separate times of going back to the building to do those interviews. But I think for me, the getting back to football happened because I had moved out to California. I said it's a long story, but I moved out to California. I was a diehard Chiefs fan. I had a sales job, you know, doing something that wasn't related to journalism. But, you know, I joined Arrowhead Pride, an SB Nation site, you know, as a Chiefs fan who wanted to interact with other Chiefs fans. And I was living in California as a sales rep. So it wasn't like I was going to the office every day. Like, I was at a sales territory. So everybody in my company was spread out all over the country. So I didn't really know anyone. And so I found the blog, started writing as a fan, free account, like just like anybody can write fan posts. And, you know, some of the feedback from the fans there and the people at that Arrowhead Pride community at the time gave me feedback, and they're like, hey, we really like this stuff. Like, you're a good writer. I was like, well, I'm glad I'm using my college degree for something. Sorry, mom and dad. Like, this is what it is, and blogging, and people like it. But, you know, what that led to after a few years of that, or a couple years, you know, Joel Thorman, the guy who ran the site at the time, and, you know, he and his brother started it. They reached out and said, hey, do you want to be a contributor? Do you want to do this more consistently? We can give you, you know, a couple $100 or whatever it was. And so that's kind of how it started. And then that platform just kept growing, and I kept putting more effort into it because of the feedback I was getting from Chiefs fans on that site. And so I tell the story to let people know when I say, like, I feel a part of Chiefs fans and I feel like I owe it to everyone who helped me get in this position. Because if I hadn't gotten the positive feedback, and getting positive feedback on the internet right now, like, doesn't happen often. And so, like, they pushed me to want to put more effort into it and want to put a little more effort into it. And then it got to the point where Arrowhead Pride had a YouTube channel that they started, and then we had a podcast going. And next thing you know, I'm working 30 hours a week, you know, as a part-time guy making, you know, $400 a month. So it wasn't a lot of money. And that's part of this business too, is everybody wants to do it. It's competitive, and, you know, companies, if they don't have to pay a lot of money, they won't. That's just the way things are right now. And if you can't sponsor the content, then there's no money. And so you got to figure out a way to be different without being edgy and a hot take guy. And there's no good answer. Everybody can pretend to be an expert in it, but it's trial and error, and it's just trying to be different and do good work. And so I know I'm kind of going off in a few different places right now, but for me, that's kind of where it started. But football just happened because I was a Chiefs fan that moved out to California, who started writing about football. But I will say, it's funny to talk with people that knew me from high school, that knew me as a baseball guy. I played football in high school. I wasn't very good. But it's funny for them to know me as a baseball guy and be like, why are you talking about football? And then for football people now to be like, you played baseball? Yeah. Like, hey, I just liked football. I liked the game more. I never got into the sabermetrics and all that stuff with baseball. I get it, and I respect them. I'm not anti. I just, that part of the game isn't what I like to discuss. And if you're going to do color analyst, like, you're going to be an analyst in baseball, you have to use those stats. And it's just not, I'm like the old school people in like all those movies, like the sound of the bat and the sound of the swing instead of, you know, whatever all those stats are, exit velocity and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't get into that.
So I have a question that might be a little silly, but when Patrick Mahomes came to the Chiefs, of course, everything got crazy, especially with his first year as a starter. How much do you think that influenced your success, if at all? Because, of course, that brings more attention to the Chiefs. And I feel like you've mentioned Billy Quach. I didn't know who he was until I started seeing his videos that he made of Patrick Mahomes. So do you think that kind of brought a lot more attention to your work? And, of course, it brought a lot more attention to just the Chiefs in general.
Is that just Patrick Mahomes coming to the Chiefs?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, when you have Patrick Mahomes, we've joked before internally, like, you know, we try to think of content ideas and what would get the most views of just, you know, shooting Patrick Mahomes, like, eating cereal for breakfast. Like, people would watch that. Like, let's just make a whole series out of what did Patrick have for breakfast, because there's that appetite for everything the guy does, because he's off to the best start for any player in NFL history. And to know it as you're seeing it doesn't happen often. A lot of times it's like after the fact, you're like, we didn't really appreciate how good he was when he was here. And I think there's Chiefs players that's going to be the guys like Jamal Charles. I think there's going to be cases for that when you look back, be like, wow, we did appreciate it. We probably should have appreciated it more. I don't think that's the case with Mahomes. I think everybody kind of has a pretty good idea that this kid's really special. But yeah, I don't think there's any denying the fact that, you know, every aspect of the organization, whether it's revenue, ticket sales, sponsorship sales, video views, podcast listens, I mean, the bar has been raised all across the board. We call it the Patrick Mahomes effect. You know, I joked with guys last year at training camp up in St. Joe that the number of people after his MVP season that wanted to come and see Mahomes in person, the attendance records at St. Joe skyrocketed. Like, we set all kinds of attendance records. Well, on some of those big days, like, they charge for parking in the parking lot, and that, like, $10 goes to Missouri Western. And so, like, we joked that Missouri Western made so much more money, and the organization and those student athletes had a significant bump in the money and the resources that they were able to do because of Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's a trickle down effect. That now that his contract is done, the Chiefs aren't going to worry about all these points that are brought up in negotiations, but there's definitely a very real trickle down effect that affects, like I said, bars, restaurants, people going out and celebrating, and apparel, people wanting to buy Super Bowl shirts, MVP shirts. Do we have time to run Wasp shirts? Whatever it is, the companies figure out a way to kind of get their little piece of it. Yeah, there's no question that Patrick Mahomes coming has changed everything for the future of the organization that will be known for decades to come.
What sort of relationships do you have with, you know, professional football players, and how cool is it that you are able to speak with them, you know, so frequently? Is that an every sports fan's dream, or?
Probably for every Chiefs fan's dream, but I will say that the one thing that was the hardest to explain to people when I had the job, like my friends and family, people ask me like, what's it like to be about Patrick Mahomes or on this guy? Like, they're just people, you know, like I know it's hard on like outside, but you're around him every day. You don't see him as like, they don't like to be doted on either. That's the one thing around being around the players. They don't want to be told how great they are all the time. You know, they just want to be treated like normal people. And that's how I would treat them because that's how I saw them. You know, I joke with people, like when I got to the Chiefs, like, you know, meeting with Andy Reid and, you know, those guys, like there's this aura about them, but I never had that like, oh my gosh, like I'm a fan and look who's here, until I saw Christian Okoye on the sideline before a game. Like that was my wheelhouse, like to kind of date myself a little bit. But when I saw him, I was like, oh my God, like I want to go talk to this guy. And they're like, Jamal Charles is on this team, like all these current players. I'm like, but that's Christian Okoye. Like that's a Nigerian nightmare. Like that's the guy I grew up watching. So, it's cool, but you get to see them as people. And I think I have a lot of people reach out and have asked similar questions as far as, you know, we've seen the relationship, you know, just from what you see publicly, like that you have with players and what they think about, you know, how do you do that? And the best advice I got when I started with the Chiefs was from the VP of communications, Ted Cruz. And I asked him that exact thing, because when I got the job with the Chiefs, I hadn't spent a lot of time in locker rooms. I hadn't been around athletes a lot. You know, I was a blogger on the outside sharing my opinion. Wasn't a hot take guy, and I'm still not, and I never will be, because I have too much respect for, you know, the work that these guys have put in to get to where they are right now. You know, they could be a practice squad guy who might not make the team, probably won't make the team, but I'm going to show that player just as much respect as I'm going to show Eric Fisher, Mitch Schwartz, or Patrick Mahomes, Kelsey, whoever it is, because they've earned it to get to that position. And so I think treating them like people and being normal around them, that is what Ted had told me. I go, how do I create relationships with players? Like, how do I do this well? And he said, be a normal person. And he goes, don't worry about the short-term gain, about trying to small talk just because you can. You respect the guy's time, and over time, they'll see that I'm not small talking with them. I'll go in, I'll ask my couple of questions, and I'll get out. And it may seem cold at the time or unfriendly, but after a while, they see like, hey, you've got a job to do. I've got a job to do. There's time for a small talk. It's not right now. Like, I'm not trying to be rude. Let me get my questions and I'll get out of here, because I respect what you got going on. And like I said, in the moment, it may have felt kind of cold at the beginning, but a couple years later, the relationship's different and it grows. And then once the younger players see how the veterans kind of acted around me and they saw that it'd just be normal and they could be normal around me, they could say what they wanted without worrying about, oh, is that going to end up on Twitter? Is that going to be a podcast somewhere? Mentioned, and, you know, developing trust like that and having an ability to know like things that can be shared and things that can't, and doing that well to where it represents everybody the right way, but also not spinning things or trying to take something that's a negative and trying to make it seem like it's a positive or that's not a big deal. Like, I wasn't going to do that either. But yeah, it's fun to see those guys as people. The one example, I guess I'm thinking of, last year at training camp, just dumb stuff, but Patrick Mahomes, best player in football, was carrying his tray at lunch, like after he was done eating, he was taking to put it up, and he dropped it, and like all the stuff broke, the glass broke, like the plates broke, just this humongous, just picture like the entire team in the cafeteria, quarterback drops it, makes this loud noise, he got a standing ovation, like everybody clapped and was just giving him, like that's the dynamic of like the players just giving each other a hard time. It's not like everyone's just bowing to Mahomes. It's like, good job, idiot. Like, you dropped all your stuff and now somebody's got to come clean. And he picked it up because that's who he is. Somebody ran out there and he helped pick it up because, you know, that's who Mahomes is. He's a good dude. But that's the kind of dynamic that those guys have. And, you know, everybody kind of gave him a hard time for a few days after that. But he got them all back by playing pranks on him in the dorms. I don't think I reported on those either. But those guys prank each other a lot. He's put a bunch of 25-year-old kids together in a dorm and don't let them go anywhere. They're going to figure out a way to have some fun. I'm sure they're doing it now. I don't know how that's going to work over at the stadium, but I'm sure they're doing something.
So being a Chiefs fan, this might be a little biased, but I think Mitch Holthus is one of the best in the business when it comes to play-by-play and just what he does overall. What are some things that you took away from him, and did you feel like you learned a lot from him during your time with the Chiefs?
I don't think there's any better play-by-play guy, any – hosting an event to get everybody excited. I don't think there's anybody better in the world than Mitch Holthus. He has an ability to capture a crowd and get people into it. And the one thing that I'll say about Mitch is that the guy that you see on game days or that you hear doing the interviews, the intense, the passion that comes out, he's like that way all the time. And he is fiercely, proud of his position in being voice of the Chiefs. And he wears that. That is his identity. And he's good at it. He's a great representation for what he does and for himself to Chiefs Kingdom. And I learned a lot from him just about how to prepare, how he goes about his business, and the way that, like I said, he prepares during the week and gets ready. You see why he's good on Sundays is because the way he prepares throughout the week. And so if nothing else, that's what I'll remember about Mitch is, you know, in working with him for the last 6 years, is how much he puts into what he does and how much he loves being the guy.
What kind of relationships do you have with other members of the media, people that are also on the Chiefs beat and people that are on other beats around the league? And how important is it to develop strong relationships with them?
It's crucial. You have to develop relationships around the league and relationships with your own little beat writing team. Whether it's the Chiefs or Royals, it's always like the same kind of group of, that core group of, six or seven people that are at everything all the time. And then, some of the TV people and a couple of other reporters will jump in like once a week or once every other week. You'll kind of see them pop in. But, I had great relationships. I loved working with those guys. It's competitive because we're all trying to kind of fight for attention as far as, and I mean attention, I mean views and that our content matters and all that kind of stuff. But, I miss training camp because we'd all get together every year and we'd go out drinking the last day of training camp, all the beat writers. And being the team guy with a bunch of beat writers is not the easiest dynamic. And that in a lot of places around the league, it's not great. And I can't speak to that because I haven't been in those, but from what I've been told, that it is unique about how well we all got along. It probably says a lot about how good the people are that are in that room. Guys like Herbie Teope and Sam Mellinger and Blair Kirkhoff and Nate Taylor and Matt Derrick, and I'm going to forget somebody. But, Danny Welniak is one of my favorite people on the TV side. So, I think it's vitally important to create those relationships because you'll lean on people. You won't hear something at a press conference and be like, hey, what did they say? What was the injury to that player? What was this? What was that? And it sounds simple, but, we all would help each other on that stuff. If somebody, somebody's recording during a presser broke, somebody else would share theirs. So, and we'd all work together on that stuff. But I've had relationships with guys like Herbie Teope, who was one of the guys who helped me get the job with the Chiefs. And now he's the lead beat writer for the Kansas City Star. And so, I've known Herbie since he helped me get that job. So it was something where we already had a previous relationship going in. But beyond that, relationships with national media is probably the single most important thing that helped me in my job that I didn't realize how important it was until I left and everyone said, we don't have a lot of these relationships right now. Being able to reach out to Peter Schrager or Charles Davis, so these guys that I would see at the Senior Bowl and then the Combine, and then we'd see them at games, and then we'd see them at other off-season events where the draft, or we just cross paths to create those relationships so I can reach out and say, hey, Peter, do you want to do a podcast with me for 10 minutes, talking about Mahomes or talking about this or that? And him being like, yeah, sure, it's going to be fun, and always knowing that there's a give and take and you got to be able to provide value or just, be a resource for different people in a lot of different ways. So I have respect for those guys. I think that they saw value in using the Chiefs brand to do stuff with us, which is why we asked them to do it, which is why they did it. But yeah, you've got to have relationships in this business.
I think that's some really good advice, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. Now we're going to move on to this little thing where we will say a name of a former player or a media member, and you just tell us the first thing that comes to your mind. Now,
oh man, uh-oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm from Conway, Arkansas, so is this guy. He played okay for the Chiefs for 1 year, Peyton Hillis.
All right, Brian Daboll is the offensive coordinator. I remember getting super excited when Peyton Hillis was brought in because his MVP season was when Brian Daboll was his offensive coordinator with the Browns. But I do remember that news dropped of Brian Daboll being hired at 9 o'clock on a Friday night, which is never a good sign for any kind of PR release to come out. It means that they didn't think it was going to be great news at the time. That's just my two cents. But I do remember Peyton Hillis and as a Chiefs fan being like, we got Brian Daboll. He got the most out of Peyton Hillis. Here we go. Obviously, that didn't happen. with the Chiefs, but yeah, I will always remember Peyton Hillis' time with the Chiefs for that excitement that one Friday night that I got on Arrowhead Pride and was commenting all I could.
Another guy from the Central Arkansas area, he played at UCA, Tre'Mon Smith.
Absolutely burner. I remember talking with Tre'Mon as he walked down the hill the day at practice that they moved him to running back, actually right before he got released. He had a red jersey on. I remember talking to him and everyone being like, I think he can do it. Like, I think that this is going to work. I was like, he's never done this. This is going to be so much more difficult. And he was literally like talking as he was walking down the hill with guys about like how to hold the ball, like how to get a handoff, like stuff that you would learn like way back when. It's not an insult on it. It was just, that's how like basic things were starting back on. But Tre'Mon was always a good dude, lightning fast, definitely had special teams potential. I know Dave Tobe loved him, but should make an impact in the league and should have a pretty long career as a guy who's pretty good at special teams and has that speed and that return ability.
Now, I don't know if you know who Steve Conley is. He used to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. But I've worked with him over here in ESPN Northwest Arkansas, and he speaks more highly of Rick Burkholder than anybody he's ever spoken of. And I just want to know what you think of Rick Burkholder.
Rick's one of the best in the business. There's a reason he's the president of the Professional Football Athletic Trainer Society, PFATS, that he was the trainer that, you know, we talk about Coach Reed's tree of all the different coaches that have worked with him. Rick Burkholder has his own tree. And you know, the pride that he takes in, you know, guys that worked for him going off to other places, like Eric Sugarman, is the one that comes to mind right off the bat, because they've had some pretty public injuries and things up there in Minnesota with the Vikings, mainly Teddy Bridgewater's leg injury a few years ago, where he may have lost his leg and definitely his career if Eric Sugarman hadn't been prepped and ready to go. And Eric Sugarman's a protege of Rick Burkholder. And I talked to Rick. I talked to Rick's dad, who was a historic high school athletic trainer back in Pennsylvania, where Rick learned everything from his dad. And I know the trust that Andy Reid has in Rick Burkholder. And so, yeah, there's a reason that everybody speaks really highly of Rick. He's very passionate about what he does. And the Chiefs are really good hands right now with Rick, with that his whole staff. You know, David Glover, Evan Kraft, Tiffany Morton, Julie. Everybody who works for him are the best at what they do. And Aaron Borgman before that, who's now doing his own thing in Kansas City. You know, those guys know what they're doing, and the Chiefs are in good hands, especially in this environment, that, you know, the NFL will lean on Rick, you know, for how they're doing things, and they'll be a model of doing this the right way. There's no doubt in my mind.
So I'm from the Washington, D.C. area. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm a huge fan of the team formerly known as the Redskins, but all the D.C. media, they've been talking about this E60 ever since it came out. I want to know your thoughts on Alex Smith.
Alex Smith is one of my favorite dudes I've ever been around, and I never got more upset with Chiefs fans and trying to fight false narratives. That was not my job. But the flack that he was getting, you know, when he was here for things that fans don't necessarily always understand as far as what's happening on the field. But that guy was an absolute warrior, and we saw it. And I was happy the documentary came out, not happy for the injury, but happy the documentary came out. And it was the way that it was, because that was the player that we saw in the locker room, that he was always respectful. He was always a good dude. And the work that he did that he's still doing with foster kids, him and Elizabeth, his wife, and even his mom and dad have been helping and trying to raise the age limit of when kids kind of foster out of the system, that they kind of get forgot about after 18 years old. I was lucky enough to be able to write, you know, a long form feature when Alex was here, the year that he was the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee, and talking with some of the kids that have been directly affected by Alex, you know, using, you know, his platform. And the one thing that people forget about Alex Smith is he is brilliant. I think it was 2.5 years he graduated with an econ degree from Utah. I think it was 2.5 years. I mean, he is brilliant. And the one thing I'll say is some of the players always joked about trying to like have conversations with Alex, because he was such a scholar. Like, he was so smart and like econ, like interested in world market, like all this stuff. And they're talking about like, you know, Breaking Bad or like their favorite TV show. And it's just, he was so like, he's going to, whatever he's going to do after football is going to be amazing. But you know, wasn't surprised to see him fight back the way that he did, in the way that he and Liz was a star of that, kind of being there for him and being his rock. It was, it meant a lot. I haven't talked to Alex since he left, but will always be one of my favorite players, and I couldn't have more respect for him. And not only that, but how he treated Patrick Mahomes. Speak more on it now than I would have back then, but there are a lot of instances around the league in which veteran quarterbacks, and some of them have gotten public, the ones that, you know, have a lot of leaks in their building. But the way that Alex took Patrick Mahomes under his wing from day one, knowing he was basically going to take his job at some point, it was going to be that. It worked out for Alex. He got paid, which I'm really happy about. I was more happy than anything. You know, I wanted to stay with the Chiefs. They have Patrick. As long as he gets paid, I'm good, because I see the players. I see what they put into it. So not just guys like D Ford, happy he got paid. I sucks that he's not around, but I'm happy he got his money and he got what he earned. But for Alex, I couldn't have more positive things to say about that guy. And I think the more, every time we talk about Patrick Mahomes and what he's done in Kansas City, part of that story should always be what Alex Smith did for him his rookie year, because it really did make a huge difference.
Moving on to one of my favorite Razorback running backs of all time, spent a few good years in Kansas City. Tell us about Nile Davis.
Nile Davis had the single most important special teams play in this generation of Chiefs fans' memory, because of the, you know, the eight straight losses in the playoffs, which was an NFL record, and just all of the historic problems and being nervous going down to Houston. I remember sitting in the press box and just being like, please don't have something catastrophic happen. Like, please, my heart can't take this anymore. And for him to take the opening kickoff and run it back not far from where he grew up, is going to be a play that is always going to be remembered, you know, by Chiefs fans. And every player wants to have a long career and make lots of money and win Super Bowls. But not a lot of players get to experience that. And the players that don't get moments like Nile Davis had in the playoffs. So whatever he says 20 years from now, Chiefs fans are going to remember Nile Davis. I just did it. Nile Davis. There's no S. Nile Davis and his run back, which, you know, talk about legacy and people remembering your abilities. He had that moment, and definitely one I'm always going to remember.
Last guy here gained some notoriety this year, week 17, when he was calling two games at once, Kevin Harlan.
Kevin Harlan's the GOAT. He's the greatest play-by-play guy. Like, he's the best there is. And he's also a wonderful human being. I learned a lot from Kevin, even just from the handful of conversations that we had. Whenever he was going to call a Chiefs game, we'd reach out to him a few days before and ask him, you know, if he'd join a podcast or do a video. And for as busy as that guy is, he'd always make time. And if he couldn't make the time, he'd come find you, or he'd, you know, mention something to you when he saw you on game day. And so the stuff that a lot of people don't get to see, outside of just the pure talent, is just what a good dude he is. And I'm thrilled that him and Trent are going to be working together this year, because yeah. Trent Green is also maybe probably the coolest person that I've gotten to know that I've watched as a player is Trent Green. Like, he is a genuinely good human being, and love being around him. And him and Kevin Harlan working together this year for CBS is going to be perfect and beautiful and everything Chiefs fans should want. But they are the three crew, and I don't know if the Chiefs are ever going to get a three crew from CBS. They're going to get a lot of Tony Romo again, yeah. And a lot of Charles Davis now that he moved from Fox to CBS. So that's going to be great for Chiefs fans and AFC teams, because Charles Davis is also very good and another one of the nicest dudes in this business.
Well, BJ, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to say that I think your idea, Let It Fly, I don't know if that was your idea, but what you guys are doing, I think that's going to be awesome. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the content that you produce. And I wish you the best of luck going into your future.
Thank you. We're doing NFL right now, but we're going to work with all sports, the name, image, likeness stuff, the NIL stuff. We're going to be working with college athletes, probably starting in 2021, whenever that goes down. So probably down in your neck of the woods, considering Arkansas seems to put out, whether it's Benintendi or Rakeem Boyd now, or, you know, any of the other guys that have come in the past, you guys have some pretty good athletes coming through there. So we'll be down in Fayetteville, or as Billy Quach calls it, Fayette Chill. Probably quite a bit.
Well, once again, BJ, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for tuning into Press Roots this week, and many thanks to BJ Kissel for joining us. BJ is one of the best in the business, and he had some great stories from his Chiefs days and even better advice for us. We're taking next week off, so our next episode will drop August 31st. To find out who our guest will be, follow us on Twitter at PressRootsPod. If you have any feedback or guest suggestions for us, feel free to tweet at us or send us a DM. Once again, thank you for listening to Press Roots. So long for now.